I'll do that again. Call the committee to order, and we will start with got the minutes of the March 30th meeting, and Representative Gunther, want to move those? Representative Gunther moves the meeting minutes to March 30th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Conanen.
Conanen, you made a fin ladder out of you, William.
Representative Sertich moves that House File 1621 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the General Register. Representative Conanen, to your bill. Wait a minute. We moved the House file. Are we moving the Senate file? Yes. Sorry, we just make sure we get this right. It's 4:53. Is that where we moved in? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry about that. I'll change my motion to move Senate file 4:53 to the General Register.
Don't do that again. Representative Sertich moves House file, or Senate file 453 to be recommended to pass and re-refer to the General Register. Representative Conanen, you want to keep with the Senate language? Is that your intention?
Yes, that's right.
Remember what we talked about earlier. Okay.
Right.
Please explain your bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. And the Senate file is the language that I want to move forward, so thank you. This bill was brought to me by the members of the Minnesota State Auctioneers Association and also from an auctioneer from my district, Mr. Joel Kirk. For going back to at least 60 years, auctioneers were always able to keep their same license number. And then through something that they missed and apparently everyone else missed in some type of housekeeping bill last session, there was some change in statute that now when auctioneers go in to have their license renewed, they get a different number every year. And that presents quite a problem for them, and as that any printed material they have with the license number on it needs to be changed every year. If they happen to have an auction that they're working on at the time, and from when they get the auction and start printing their flyers and whatnot, and if the license happens to be renewed during that time, all of a sudden they have to redo everything because there's a different license number. So what this bill does then is return that whole process to the way it always had been, where the auctioneers will keep the same license numbers from year to year. They'll still need to renew every year for a fee, and they do that with their county auditor, but the change is that they'll be able to keep the same license number. I'll quit with that unless anyone has any questions.
Questions to the bill? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Sertich renews his motion that Senate File 453 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, shouldn't you have said going once, going twice, sold?
I'm not quick enough to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee.
That's neat.
Representative Rukavina. And I discussed this with Representative Rukavina previously, and we've got quite a few testifiers. So what the plan is to give each side 20 minutes, and they can allocate it among the testifiers however they would like, and we'll then give members opportunities to ask questions and offer any amounts.
Chair, just quickly, if I may ask, am I on the clock now, or when does the clock start ticking? Because I do have to put the bill in order.
Yep, let's get the clock doesn't start until we do that.
Mr. Chair, I would move then Senate File 3.
The clock, Representative Rukavina, is for the testifiers. You're not on the clock.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
I'm getting objections from your side of the aisle on that one.
Mr. Chair, members.
We have the Senate file, Representative
Chair,
Rukavina.
I believe I, just for legislative rules, I move the Senate file, and then I would like to substitute the language of House File 48.
Representative Rukavina moves Senate File number 3 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on jobs and economic opportunity finance. We got that request.
Mr. Chair, I thought that the bill would move since there's no fiscal impact to the general registry.
My committee very much like to have it in our committee.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I won't argue about that, but there is no fiscal impact, so I guess a quick explanation by Representative Gunther, other than that his fiscal analyst wants to see it, or committee administrator wants to see it. I would like to know why the reason would be that it would go to a finance committee with no fiscal impact on the state of Minnesota.
It has a fiscal impact.
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rokovina, it does have a very big fiscal impact.
Mr. Chair,
I have many constituents that say that they very much think it's huge.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rokovina,
I was not requested to get a fiscal note and have no state or local.
He's asked for one.
Implications.
Representative Surge.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther, I'm a lot newer here than you are, and I'm newer than you are, and I've seen fiscal notes before, and usually what the fiscal note shows is impact the units of government.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you perceive there being an impact to a unit of government on this bill?
I'll have to ask Brian tomorrow, because he's said that. His best information that does have fiscal impact.
Well, Mr. Chair, I won't argue the point then. Let Representative Gunther do an unorthodox motion. And fine, let's just move on, because I have some waitresses that are here and have to probably go to work or do so early in the morning and have kids that they have to get back home to. So, Mr. Chair, then I'll move Senate File recommended to pass. Senate File 3 be recommended to pass and refer to state jobs and economic development finance.
Yep, we've got that motion in front of us. Is it your intent to insert the House language then?
I would do that then after that as an amendment.
Okay. Representative Surge moves, or Representative Rukavina moves the House language to get the bill in the shape that he'd like to discuss it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
All in favor of inserting the House language, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, as I said, I'm not going to talk very long on this. It's been since 1997 was the last time that the minimum wage went up for the lowest paid workers in the state of Minnesota. And what we're doing by inserting the House language is increasing both the high and low minimum wage in Minnesota by 75 cents a year on July 1st of the 05 and 06. Members, you know, I think all of us here believe in rewarding work, and Minnesotans, I know, have always believed in rewarding work, and Minnesotans, 81% of them believe that the minimum wage in this state is too low. I've always prided this state because we were above the minimum wage, but that hasn't been the case, the federal minimum wage, I might add, in recent years. Right now we have 15 states, as high as 735 in Washington, above us, our closest, one of our neighbors, Illinois, is going, I believe, to 615. And you're going to hear arguments tonight that, you know, these are teenagers or they're young people and they're not heads of household, and it's training wage, minimum wage. It's just not true, members. But I will just let my testimony go at that. You'll hear arguments that that the minimum wage will drive up other wages in the $6 and $7 an hour range, and I guess my response to that is I hope so. Because minimum wage, if we had kept pace when it was instituted with inflation, it should be about $8.50 an hour. And so I'm just going to call down the servers, I guess is the politically correct term now. I still call them waitresses and waiters. But the servers, if they would come down here. And the other folks that want to testify on behalf of this bill. and have them just identify themselves and tell you their stories, and then you can make a decision here tonight whether you want to put more money in these people's pockets and whether or not that they should be rewarded for the job that they do. So, Mr. Chair, I'm just going to get up and sit over by my friend Representative Jarlison Clark and have these people that have come here tonight to talk to you testify, and I appreciate them coming here.
Is the testifiers come up, would you please introduce yourself and then go ahead with your testimony. Just remember that we've got 20 minutes for each side, so please leave time for the rest of the testifiers. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. My name is Jill Gagan. I have been a server since I was 15 years old. I took on the profession coming from the back room as a dishwasher on a Friday night fish fry when two servers threw their uniforms at their manager and said, "I'm out of here." And we were in the middle of a full house. Needless to say, those tips that night were pity tips. I'm sure I've received several of those since. When I first started in my career of service in food and beverage, we had the tip credit. I was to be paid at a lower rate than minimum wage at that time. At that time, I believe minimum wage was $3.10. Server minimum wage was $2.20, and I was being paid $1.87 an hour. I wasn't even receiving the supposed waitress minimum wage. The reason for this is it's very difficult to police when you have a two-tier system. By keeping servers flat, straight, and concise with everyone else, it's very easy for the state to investigate books and make sure that restaurants are following the laws that are set for them to follow and pay the wages they are expected to pay. I went in and out of food and beverage based off from the treatment that I received and the lack of respect that I received for the job that I did. Not everyone is meant to be a brain surgeon, and not everyone can be a server. I deserve to get paid for the work that I do, and I enjoy and I love the work that I do. I do it because I'm good at it, because I enjoy it. There's nothing wrong with that. But I don't feel that I should be penalized because I may possibly receive tips. Yes, there are times that people do overtip. Is it checks and balances? On occasion. But there are so many times that the work that we do comes with no tip whatsoever. None. There's kitchen cleanup, there's setup, there's portioning of dressings. There's a numerous amount of work behind the scenes that the general public does not see, and we do not receive tips for. The compensation that we're asking for is that we get kept at the same rate and wage as other people doing similar work in a grocery store produce section or retail. That's all we're asking for, is to be kept the same. We're not asking for anything over and above than what we deserve. I thank you very much for your time.
My name is Nelson Innes, and I'm a bartender. Before I get in, I have a brief prepared statement, but I just want to add to what she said. All of you have salaries that you make, and it's set to a certain amount, and a lot of you have other jobs and other ways to make income. Some of you don't, and the ones of you that make an additional income, you don't get a lower salary than the people that make an additional income or may make money through investments or whatever. It wouldn't be fair for that to happen to you. Because we make money in addition to our wages, it's not really fair to cut our wages below what other people get, to cut the minimum wage below what other people may get. I think you can all kind of relate to that. Okay, that just occurred to me right now. Since it opened 2 years ago, I've been a bartender at a pub in St. Paul. Several months ago, I and the four other bartenders I work with had our pay cut from $6.50 an hour to $5.15. At the same time that our restaurant did this to us, they're undergoing a multi-million-dollar expansion. Yeah. We were told that business was slow due in part to the hockey lockout, and if our pay was not cut, one of us would have to be laid off. We thought about this and it made sense at first, but then we realized that it was only partially true. While it had been slow, the threat of laying off a bartender was only a scare tactic. Such an action would not reduce the labor cost for the restaurant. It would simply mean more hours for those of us remaining when we worked the shifts that the laid-off bartender had previously been scheduled. Actually, if you think about it, it can result in a higher labor cost because it's more likely that we'd work overtime hours as well. I guess I can only assume that our pay was cut not to prevent a layoff, but simply because it could be, and because our manager's bonus is based in part on labor costs. Hmm. In 12 years of working in restaurants, I've had bonus-hungry managers ask me to work off the clock. I've had them send home coworkers who were needed and overload the remaining staff. I've had them go into the time clock and adjust my hours to avoid paying me overtime, and I've even had them simply refuse to pay me overtime. I'm relatively certain that if the minimum wage were to go up, but I, as a tipped employee, were penalized and had my wage kept the same, I guess in this case, when I originally wrote this, the tip penalty was to actually reduce the minimum wage, but now it's just, if it were to stay the same, I would soon find myself sticking around doing much of the work that had ordinarily been in the hands of higher paid employees. Cooks and their $9 or more an hour pay rate would go home with less hours worked and a smaller paycheck, and tipped employees would be left to clean the kitchen, wash the dishes, do prep work, etc., etc. This happens to some degree now because cooks generally make a higher wage, but if the tip penalty were enacted, things would only get worse. I'd like to add that the people I work for are decent people. I respect them in many ways. But there's a prevalent mentality that if you're not a good, you're not a good businessman if you're not taking advantage of your workers as much as possible under the law. For this reason, tipped employees need the minimum wage law to protect them just like everyone else.
My name is Joy Anderson. I'm a lifelong Minnesota resident. I've been in the workforce for 32 years. I'm a banquet server and a minimum wage worker. Since the minimum wage has increased, which was 8 years ago the last time it did, every one of our bills has gone up. All our utilities, our heat is so high, our property taxes are higher, our insurance, everything. And as a food server, I believe that I should be included in any minimum wage increase. Part of the reason that I do the work I do is because I need to work flexible hours. My dad is in a wheelchair from a severe stroke, and he would be in a nursing home right now if I couldn't do as much as I do for my parents. And there are thousands of people like me, just thousands of people, working as hard as I do. And I ask you to please increase the minimum wage and do not leave us out.
Hi, my name is Renee Creighton. I'm head of household. I work two jobs to make ends meet. One of those jobs is at the Marquette Hotel as an on-call banquet server. And I've done this since the 80s. And I have two children, an 8-year-old and a 13-year-old. So I'm wearing different hats. I also play taxi. And I have to be very flexible to work around their schedules as well as my own. And I remember when I went in to get a mortgage for my first house. I went through my sister-in-law because I knew that she was working for a mortgage company and I needed to have that added advantage because when they asked me what my income was, I said it's $335 plus per hour, which meant that I could get less of a house and I had to pay more in interest because I have what they call a variable income based on the fact that it was a tip income. It fluctuates. And so then when I just moved into a new school district to get my children into a better school district, I went back to my sister-in-law to get my second mortgage. And she said, so what is your income now? And I said, $515 plus. And she goes, well, it hasn't gone up much. And it's still, I'm at the same disadvantage of it being a variable income. So it does affect what I can borrow, what I can afford. And I think to the future that if I need to get a car loan or if I need to get a college loan, then how that's going to affect me, especially if you freeze me at this point with $5.15 an hour as a tipped employee. That's going to really affect my long-range potential to borrow or to have income and affect my future as well as my children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have on the list Carrie Thomas.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Carrie Thomas, and I'm with the Jobs Now Coalition. We're a statewide coalition of over 100 organizations that advocate on behalf of low-wage workers, unemployed, dislocated workers. I'll be relatively quick, in part because this gentleman is here from Mankato this evening to testify in favor of it, and I want to give him a chance. I just want to address a couple of things. I hope that each of you, I got a chance to talk to a number of you and gave you a packet of information. It's kind of all the evidence in favor of raising the minimum wage, all the evidence refuting that there would be any job loss. There have been a series of studies, some focusing on small businesses. I'd be happy to answer any questions today or at any later time on that issue. I also want to remind you, and we've been saying this for a couple of years, that there's broad public support, bipartisan support for increasing the minimum wage. We commissioned a question on the Minnesota State Survey a couple of years ago, and 81% of Minnesotans, including 69% of Republicans, said that they favored an increase to the minimum wage. And you've seen this in other states. I also want to remind you that Congress has failed to take action since 1997, including last month they failed to increase the minimum wage. We now have 14 states, New Jersey will be the 15th, and the District of Columbia that have a higher minimum wage. And I also want to remind you, it's not just about the 49,000 workers that make the minimum wage. It's about up to over 230,000 jobs in Minnesota pay less than $7 an hour, and this bill would affect a significant portion, if not all of them, because estimates are that workers who make above the minimum wage would be affected as well. And I've included some recent information that we got from Deed in those packets that show in your districts how many workers could be affected. So I'm going to end there, and Mr. Chair, and Representative Rukavina, this is out of order. This is Todd Perkins, who's from Mankato, and I want to make sure he had a chance to come up. Thank you.
That's fine.
Please introduce. Mr. Chair, thank you for allowing me to speak this evening. My name is Todd Perkins, and I am from Mankato, Minnesota. I am the owner of Wilson Trailer Sales of Minnesota and Pier Pleasure, that's P-I-E-R, Pleasure. Wilson Trailer Sales is a retailer of semi-trailers, trailer parts, and has a full-service facility. Employs 17 people. Pier Pleasure manufactures aluminum boat docks and employs 20 people. The two companies combined employ 37. I have owned these two companies for 10 years and have worked in many areas at both of these for the last 26 years. I am here today because I support increasing the minimum wage to $6.65 an hour. As an employer who has raised wages for workers above the local market rate, I have seen firsthand how effective it can be as a business strategy. In 1999, I and three other managers decided to make wages a top priority at our company. We weighed the cost of higher wages against the cost to train new people from turnover, errors and warranty costs, and efficiency costs. After much review, we decided to pay more than the market wage. The main reasons: to improve the lives of our employees and their families, to build a stronger relationship with our employees, to improve the efficiency of the company. Some of the adjustments we made, which allowed us to absorb higher payroll costs, are: we did a complete study of our pricing in the marketplace to find out if there was room. Management and ownership agreed to take less of a bonus. We hoped for cost savings in training, errors, and better efficiency, and it did turn out that way in the end, and it didn't take long. These are the long-term benefits our company has gained in taking the high road approach. Employees feel valued and have a sense of pride and self-worth. They have a positive attitude, which also creates positive coworkers. Employees have a willingness to always do their best for the business and for themselves. Both the employee and the businesses win. As a result, we have a strong bottom line. Employees are experienced from employee retention. No employee turnover due to wages. Less costly training of new employees, fewer mistakes and errors that cost the business revenue and profits, less disappointed customers, which creates more business. These savings are used to offset higher wages. minimum wage. I favor raising the minimum wage not just because it's the right thing to do, but because I'm convinced that employers need to start thinking about wages in a different way than they have in the past. Instead of continuing to look at wages as the only line item they can control, they need to stop and realize that their workers are their most important asset. And one more point. The minimum wage must be increased for all workers without a tip penalty that would freeze wages of tipped workers. We need to remember that the typical server that is not working at a high-end restaurant, he or she spends many hours performing non-tipped work and is likely to share tips with the other staff. In closing, I feel it is time for all businesses to act regarding wages. The employees that represent business are your most important asset. Fair wages create good attitudes, and employees that feel valued are what make good businesses great. The return on investment is there. I feel raising the minimum wage is good for business, its employees, our communities, and the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Terrell Clark. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Community Action Association. One reason that our members across the state has made minimum wage increase one of the highest legislative priorities this year is because we're convinced that the workers of Greater Minnesota need a raise. In fact, wages in Greater Minnesota are 34% lower than wages in the Twin Cities metro area, while the rural cost of living is only lower. A worker in Greater Minnesota is almost twice as likely to earn below the inflation-adjusted minimum wage of $8.50 per hour as a worker in the Twin Cities. In Greater Minnesota, one of every four workers earns less than the inflation-adjusted minimum wage. It's often argued that the minimum wage was never intended to be a living wage, that it should be regarded as only an entry-level wage. But we need to remember that there are no entry-level costs associated with an entry-level wage. And low-wage workers must pay the same prices as everyone else for groceries, gasoline, and other necessities. To us, a prime core part of who we are is that all people should be able to earn enough to meet their basic needs. That is not the case with the minimum wage, in which every single person is below the federal poverty guidelines. According to cost of living data published by the Jobs Now Coalition, each worker in Greater Minnesota with a family of four, with both parents working, would have to earn at least $10.12 an hour just to meet their basic needs for food, housing, health care, clothing, transportation, and child care. This means at the current minimum wage level of $5.15 an hour, a couple with two children living in Greater Minnesota would have to work almost four full-time minimum wage jobs, or 157 hours a week just to meet their basic needs. Now, we believe that the market works well in most cases, but the minimum wage has not been raised since 1997, and we believe that it does make sense to go ahead and make a slight adjustment in the market in this case. And we ask you today to support an increase in the minimum wage. Thank you.
Okay, Steve Hunter. And there's about 4 minutes left, and there's Steve Hunter and Brian Rushi left.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Steve Hunter. I'm the Secretary Treasurer of the Minnesota AFL-CIO. I know time is short. I just want to hit on a couple of points real quickly, addressing a couple of myths that we hear about increasing the minimum wage. One is that increasing the wages for our lowest paid workers will cause substantial job loss. Well, the Economic Policy Institute has studied that and it found that the 1996 and 97 minimum wage increases did not cause job loss. There was no negative impact on employment among teens or adults. In fact, adults actually experienced a small, though not statistically significant, increase in unemployment. There's also a myth that raising the minimum wage will hurt people trying to make the transition from welfare to work. In fact, in Oregon, after the minimum wage was increased, they found it did not harm welfare recipients' opportunities to find work. In fact, a larger percentage of welfare recipients in Oregon found jobs after the minimum wage increase. And also, according to a study done by Jerome Levy Economics Institute, almost 9 out of 10 small businesses surveyed for a 1999 report said that an increase in the minimum wage would not affect their decision to hire former welfare recipients. We think it's time for a raise for those lowest paid members of our society. All work has dignity, all work ought to be valued, and all work ought to be paid appropriately. We urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Brian Rushi with the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, a coalition made up of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the Minnesota Council of Churches, the Jewish Community Relations Council, and the Islamic Center of Minnesota. I want to echo what Steve Hunter just said. We're here because we believe in the dignity of the work and that a full-time, year-round worker should have a wage that does not condemn that person to poverty. Right now, a full-time minimum wage worker only earns about 68% of the poverty line. And in the end, we view this as a moral issue. Jews, Christians, Muslims alike affirm the dignity of every worker and believe that this dignity is somehow protected and realized by the laws and the ways that we arrange our community. We think that our economy exists to serve human beings, not the other way around. Let me just say one more thing. When we took on this issue back in the early 1990s, I just want you to know that we looked at the economic literature, and we also were very impressed with the fact that the modest minimum wage increases that we've experienced by federal law in the last decade, or actually now it's been a decade and a half, did not result in significant job loss, and also found that employers did not curtail benefits. And the economic research is pretty clear and goes unchallenged in that area. Finally, I'd like to distribute to the committee testimony of Father Pat Griffin, who was available this afternoon but not this evening. He wanted to testify on behalf of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, and so I have that for the page and would like that to be distributed to your packets. Thanks very much for the opportunity to testify.
Okay, now we'll go into the testimony of the opponents. Start with Tom Day.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address this issue. For the record, my name is Tom Dam with Hospitality Minnesota. We represent the Minnesota Restaurant, Hotel, and Resort Associations. We vigorously oppose any increase in the minimum wage that would make our state's minimum wage higher than the federal minimum wage and all of our surrounding states. In Minnesota, however, we have an additional problem as it relates to the hospitality and the minimum wage, and that's the lack of a tip credit. We are only one of only seven states in the nation without some form of tip credit. As you can see by the map that was handed out in your packets, the federal government in 43 states currently allow for a tip credit. Most states allow tipped employees to be paid as low as $2.13 an hour, 60% less than the state of Minnesota requires. This puts us at a competitive disadvantage with all of our neighboring states. We would never ask to go to that rate. If we were to ask for anything in a tip credit amendment, it would be merely to lock employees in at their current rate of pay at the $5.15. Well over half of all minimum wage employees in the state are tipped employees. Also in your packets is a chart of server compensation that shows that waiters and waitresses are making far more than the minimum wage. We've been updating our survey data, and the preliminary information shows us that the average hourly compensation for a server in greater Minnesota was over $13 an hour, and in the Twin Cities was just under $20 an hour, an average statewide of $17.50. You will hear from the opponents that they do not make, or should I say report, anywhere near that in tips. But do the math. When you go out to eat at a low to moderately priced full-service restaurant, the average meal ticket for an individual is around $12. If you leave a 12% tip, which is below average, of $1.44, your server has just earned $6.59 an hour in that hour with their wage. Your server will also have at least four other tables he or she will earn tips from, bringing their hypothetical compensation to almost $11 an hour. Keep in mind that this amount is assuming that there's only one person at each table, that they tip below the standard 15 to 20%, and that tables only turn over every hour. Tips are wages. Some people believe that tips are a private transaction between a patron and their server. This is not true. One of the injustices of Minnesota law is that even though tips are given to servers by their customers, employers must still pay FICA, Social Security tax, and unemployment compensation taxes on these gratuities. In fact, tips are considered wages by Social Security, United States Department of Labor, federal unemployment taxes, Internal Revenue Service, Minnesota Workers' Compensation, Minnesota Unemployment Compensation, and the Minnesota Department of Revenue. The only place the tips are currently not allowed to be considered wages is by the state when determining compensation as it relates to minimum wage. I urge you to oppose this minimum wage bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Peggy Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I appreciate the ability to come and talk to you tonight. My name is Peggy Rasmussen, and I have owned a diner in Medina, Minnesota for 30 years. And one of the reasons that I'm particularly anxious to come here is I think that I can tell you a little bit about what it's like to be in a very small business and what the minimum wage increase without a tip credit would mean to a small business like myself. There are lots of us and lots of places like myself in greater Minnesota or outstate Minnesota, and this would be a devastating blow. So I'm here to speak against a minimum wage increase without a tip credit. My first point really is equity. Servers are the most highly compensated people in my restaurant. We pay from $6 to $14 an hour to other folks. My servers, on a day when I'm not making any money, when I'm not even breaking even, are making $9 an hour in addition to minimum wage. They wouldn't stay very long if that's all that they made, but they do make that when I'm not making anything. I have a server that's been there for 24 years, a server that's been there for 12 years, and a server that's been there for 7 years. The server that has been there for 12 years, when she recently went to apply for a mortgage, kept scrupulous records of her tips. And when she went in and brought the information to the mortgage, her husband was quite shocked, actually. He had no idea that she was making that kind of money. And she easily qualified for a mortgage with her tips. They do very well. These people don't stay in jobs where they don't do very well, and they do a very good job, and I'm thrilled, and I think that they should be highly compensated. And they are. They're my frontline people. And in a little diner, we really depend a lot on those folks who know the customers and so forth, like all servers do. I have a hard time believing anyone would stay in a job when they aren't making a living wage. The other point I'd like to cover is that this would be devastating to small cafes. The food business, as you know, is notoriously low in margins. We pay for health insurance for our employees, and that has we do that religiously, and that has been a struggle for a small business like myself. The money would have to come from somewhere. We can do some price increases, but you know, people just aren't going to, they're going to pay just so much for a cup of coffee in a small cafe. Our folks are regulars and they come in every day, and there's a limit to what they're going to pay. And it may be different for different kinds of restaurants, but in small cafes, that's the way it is. I can't cut administrative costs. We don't have layers of management. It's me. And then right to the dishwasher and the servers. Small cafes are like that. The reason we don't see folks coming in to testify is because they're behind the line and they're working. They don't have the time to come down here. I can't build more stores in Wisconsin. That's not within my purvey. This would be a blow to small businesses like my own. It would be a blow to family businesses. It would, in my particular business, this minimum wage increase would cost me from $15,000 to $20,000. In a business when many of these folks are making $30,000 to $40,000, it would make running a business untenable. I know people talk a lot about loving small restaurants, and they love the personal restaurant, they love those independents, but we can't exist with unfavorable conditions. I appreciate the fact that you listen, and I appreciate the fact that I can come here and talk about it. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Okay, Jim Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. For the record, my name is Jim Frank. I'm the Senior Director of Operations for Perkins Restaurants, 41 Perkins Restaurants in Minnesota, North Dakota, and Western Wisconsin. Of those 41, 36 of them are here in the state of Minnesota. I'm not a politician or a professional lobbyist, nor am I a tipped employee at this point. I am a business person who represents one of the 50 largest employers in your state. I realize that you are not interested whether my business makes money or not, or whether or not I have to raise my prices, as I've had that conversation with some of you around the table already. But please hear me out on a few objective points that I think that I have. We are at Perkins opposed to a minimum wage increase in the absence of a tip credit for the following reason. I can attest that the market does indeed already set a wage higher than the minimum mandated wage. The company that I represent in Minnesota employs in excess of 2,000 employees. If you include our franchisees, we employ in excess of 3,500 employees, and I'm confident this would move us up from the 50th largest employer in the state if we counted franchise jobs. Of those employees, we currently pay well in excess of the current minimum wage for all positions except servers, and we currently pay more than the new proposed minimum wage, even at the 2006 number, for non-tipped employees. Our current non-tipped average employee wage in Minnesota is $8.85 an hour. With regard to the server specifically, based on the payroll information that we process, and we encourage people to claim what they make, the average server claims somewhere just north of $7 an hour in tips, which brings their combined wage to somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 an hour. And be reminded that roughly 50% of our staff in the full service business is tipped employee, or are tipped employees. Why is that information important to us? I know you've heard some comment today about job loss. Let me try to clarify that, because I don't know that that's necessarily accurate. One, as I said, the market is currently dictating a wage higher than the stated minimum already. The minimum wage bill, as it was originally initially proposed in the Senate, which is, I've come back to that for the most part today, it sounds like, would compel us to give a significant increase to the highest paid employee in the restaurant already. In our company-owned restaurants in Minnesota, that translates to roughly an additional 15,000 hours per week of server scheduled hours. So that's $15,000 a week that we will pay to the already highest paid employees in our restaurants now. Clearly, we'll have to pass that on to the customer to somewhere in the neighborhood of about a 6% menu increase, which doesn't count for any potential ripple effect for non-tipped employees. We truly struggle with how that can be the right thing in today's economic times, particularly that we're having here in Minnesota. You have heard from servers primarily today in favor of minimum wage. That's because those are the only people in Minnesota that are really making minimum wage. And that's because we have tipped them, they have tip credit there, tip income on top of that. I would reiterate only briefly, just to save time, that I have heard in these committees in the Senate as well, where the tips are considered a private transaction between the customer and employee, and our, I think someone from the Humphrey Institute earlier had said that, and are not recognized or are not income. Clearly that's not the case when it comes to Minnesota tax, federal tax, or FICA tax. You know, this is a heritage market for Perkins, and we're proud to do business in your state. However, you will find that we build very few restaurants here. Since 1997, we have built one new company restaurant in your state, as opposed to somewhere in the neighborhood of 40-some throughout the other states in the union. Why is that? Why do we build so few? Mainly due to the lack of tip credit here. We feel that it's more competitive, particularly at breakfast, which is a major day part for us, to do business in 43 other states other than Minnesota. Translation, the job loss is 70 jobs that are lost in every Perkins restaurant that we don't build here. Will we lose employees because you take minimum wage up in this state? No. We'll take the prices up that'll pay for it, and we'll continue to build restaurants in states other than Minnesota. That's where I think the job loss comes, and that was kind of missed in some of the translation earlier, I think. If you feel compelled to change minimum wage in Minnesota, we strongly believe that there should be a tip credit component to it. be reminded that we are surrounded by tip credit states, which I think you do have the map there now, which puts us at a little bit of a competitive disadvantage with our surrounding states. And as Tom said, nobody is looking to have tip wages rolled back. We'd like to have them stay at, or base wages stay at 515 for tipped employees, and then they tip, making up the difference up to the federal minimum. The bottom line is that I think that Perkins is an established brand in Minnesota and will survive here, and hope we're able to build more restaurants in this state in the foreseeable future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Frank. Mr. Anderson, why don't you come to the table and state your name for the record?
You'll like me. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Buzz Anderson. I represent the Minnesota Retailers Association. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Our association opposes efforts to increase the minimum wage above the federal level. Minnesota Retailers Association believes that market forces should determine wage levels because mandates will sadly result in the reduction in the number of entry-level jobs that retailers can provide. Let me tell you something about retailers. Retailers are the largest employer segment in this state. They make a very significant contribution to the state's economy and to the workforce. Retailers are the largest tax collectors in the state, and they do it without remuneration. Unlike other states where they get compensated for doing that, they don't get that compensation in Minnesota for collecting all that sales tax. So Representative Gunther and Representative Simpson send in their sales taxes regularly as they are required to. If they make a mistake, somebody's going to fine them for being a voluntary collector of the tax, I might add as well. Retailers are an extremely important part of the community, too, because they invest in the infrastructure to build the businesses, the brick and mortar, where you can go and shop. And they pay a higher amount of property taxes on that commercial property than other segments of property owners do. Retailers also provide needed products and services at very, very competitive prices. In every neighborhood, they are the closest link between community and commerce. Some months ago, I started calling retailers around Minnesota, and this was not scientific by any means, but I did talk to retailers in Madison, Pipestone, Detroit Lakes, Fountain, I know Representative Davis knows where that is, Tracy, Duluth, and elsewhere. I was only able to find one person, one employer that was paying minimum wage. And that person was paying minimum wage only to high school students who are part-time employees. And he jokingly said to me, you know what, the parents should probably be paying me for hiring their kids at the very beginning. You see, although they get minimum wage at the very beginning, they only get it for a very short time. And he doesn't pay any adults, only a few part-time high school employees that. But although they get it temporarily, they get a very significant bump a short time later because the employer wants to take that time to teach them some very important skills. You see, they come to these jobs without any skills. They have no customer interaction skills, or most of them don't. Did you ever walk into a store and get irritated because, you know, somebody's working with another customer and they pretend like you don't exist? Wouldn't it be nice if that person said, if you wait just a minute, I'll be right with you? Yes. Did you ever go into a store and have a couple of employees talking about the date they had last night? You know, that isn't appropriate. But those are the things that you teach new employees when they come into the workforce. Well, you also have to teach them how to use a cash register, proper processing of checks, because if you don't have all the information on checks, you can't get the money back if it's not recorded properly. How to process credit cards, debit cards, gift cards, in addition to properly selling items that have age restrictions, whether they're lottery tickets or alcohol or cigarettes or whatever. You also have to teach them how to deal with shoplifters, training with in-store activity like stocking shelves, inventory control, proper safety technique in dealing with certain products. So a young person working in a retail store, or any beginning person working in a retail store, picks up a great deal of skill sets that they can use to increase their marketability. And it's for their benefit to work in that store, and it's the benefit of the store to have them there at minimum wage at the very beginning. And then, again, a very short time span that they're above minimum wage. Again, it's very, very difficult to find people who pay below minimum wage. I do have a member who has a dozen, 15 pharmacies and of greater Minnesota. The only people he pays minimum wage to are high school students, and he pays them after school, and that's to deliver prescriptions to elderly people. They get minimum wage, but they get $1.25 for every delivery that they make. So if they make five deliveries in an hour, add that up. It's a pretty nice pay for a high school kid, and there's a real incentive for them to work hard to get these deliveries done. Raising minimum wage above the federal level means that retailers are going to be less likely to reach out to less marketable individuals who have no skills, but really need to have those skills. I'd urge you to reject this proposal from my good friend, Representative Rukavina. Thank you. I'd be glad to stand for any questions.
We've got about 2 minutes for Mike Franklin.
Former friend.
No, he's my friend.
All right. That's the last testifier that I have on the list. And if you want to go up, you got to split the 2 minutes.
Hold on, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'll be brief. My name is Mike Franklin with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and we do oppose this bill. Chamber's position is to keep Minnesota's minimum wage consistent with the federal level because the market's working. In 2004, as you've heard, there were approximately 49,000 minimum wage workers in our state, but in 2002, there were about 56,000, and in 1998, there were 78,000. The number of minimum wage workers dropped in all major demographic categories and in all occupational groups. Over 40% of minimum wage workers were employed in industries that supplement income with commissions and tips, as you've heard. Also, minimum wage workers quickly move up the income ladder. A study from the Economic Policy Institute on average shows that income of minimum wage workers increases 30% within 1 year. Individuals in the lowest income group benefit the most. They move up to at least the middle income bracket in as little as 4 years. The 1998 issue of the Journal of Economic Literature asked labor economists to estimate the impact of increasing minimum wage. On average, economists believe that a 10% increase in the minimum wage reduces youth employment by 2.1%. In 1999, research titled, "Will Increasing the Minimum Wage Help the Poor?" published by the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, concluded that the net effect of increasing the minimum wage is an increase in the proportion of poor families. More families fall into poverty because of job loss than benefit from the higher wage level. And a 2001 study by two Ohio University economists titled, "Does the Minimum Wage Reduce Poverty?" concludes that in the United States, there is virtually no meaningful evidence that a higher minimum wage rate reduces poverty. The study further concludes that the key to reducing poverty is getting individuals jobs and having them stick with those jobs until incomes rise with the higher productivity that comes with on-the-job training and work experience. Thank you very much.
Okay, questions from members? Discussions of the bill? We did 20 minutes for each side, and in fairness to the pro side, unless there's any change. We're out of time. Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment, A4.
Representative House moves the A4 amendment to the amendment. Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, members, what this amendment does is for the small employer, instead of increasing the wage to $5.65, it increases it to $5.15. And then it also increases the wage of the employee, the one under 20 years for 90 days, you can pay them. I'm raising that to $4.95 from $4.25. Mm-hmm. And on the bill, I'm not doing anything with the large business increase that Representative Rukavina has in his bill.
Okay. Representative Rukavina, do you want to over there?
Sure, I just didn't know if you wanted me to share with Mr. Hickey, so I waited.
You'd be quite a pair, Representative Rukavina.
I was afraid somebody'd snap a picture and use it against me in my brochure. But anyway, but Mr. Chair, I prefer that it not happen. I was hoping that both could get it, but Representative Hollis was kind enough to come and ask me about this 2 weeks ago, and I told him that I would accept it because I want to get the Republican and bipartisan support, and that was the way to get it. So I'll just incorporate it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina, I think we have to vote on that. I don't think we can incorporate, can we?
Mr. Chair, I can incorporate it.
You can accept it as a friendly
amendment. As a kind of a kind of an unfriendly amendment, but I'll incorporate it.
Yeah, I think unless I'm mistaken, procedurally, we need to take a vote on it, since it's not like an amendment, an oral amendment to the amendment or something like that. So all in favor of the A4 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Discussion to the bill.
Sure.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, this goes more to the procedural matter with respect to where this bill has been referred to. I had an opportunity to give some thought to it during the time of the testimony. And it does seem to me that it's best referred to the General Register. With due respect to Representative Gunther's committee, which is an important committee, if you look at the bill closely, it is not appropriately before that committee, at least in my opinion. And I guess I'd move that it be referred to the General Register, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman?
Let me get the motion in front of us. Representative Atkins moves to amend the motion so that House or Senate File 3, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register would be the new motion. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you know, there's a handout that listed that unemployment increases when we increase minimum wage. It said that in several articles, even though Ms. Thomas argued against that. The fiscal note we're trying to get is this true? And if it is true, it does have financial effect, and since we are borrowing money from the federal government for unemployment, we certainly don't want that to be higher.
Representative Davis.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that there are most likely some state jobs that pay the minimum wage or less than what the increase will go to, therefore causing a cost to the state.
Just a thought.
Barely possible.
Mr. Chair,
further discussion, Representative Rukavina.
You know, I've carried minimum wage bills in the legislature for almost my entire legislative career, and the fiscal notes, and there have been some that argued that reimbursements to like nursing homes and that where people were close to minimum wage, but I've never seen an actual fiscal note that I can recall, except once when former Representative Hilda Bitterman had one that claimed that some of her nursing homes would get a little more from the state. Representative Davids, with all due respect, I don't know anyone working for the state that would make anywhere near $5.15 an hour or less, and I just can't see the fiscal impact on it, so I guess we'll let the committee vote.
Does that include legislators?
That's true. If we go by the hour, we're probably up to 6:15.
Representative Severson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Rocadina, it would seem to me that if we enacted this into law, that there would be some implications that the Commerce Department at least would have to follow up on and say to find out whether this is being enforced in the field, and that would require some type of FTE or some kind of oversight through the Commerce Department.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, they're already having to have employees that check that minimum wage is being met. They're already working for the Department of Commerce.
Labor and Industry,
it would be, yes.
Any further discussion of the motion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail.
Appeal, division, please. Division.
Can we have a show of hands? All in favor, please raise your hands.
No. Whether or not we're going to send it to my committee.
Okay. All in favor, raise your hands.
We're still in favor.
Is that a trick question?
I'm sorry.
All in favor again.
Why did they get to vote twice?
The late hour is getting to me. All opposed. Please raise your hands. There being 13 in favor and 11 opposed, the motion prevails.
Didn't need to work anyway.
Yeah, further discussion to the bill. Any further discussion of the bill?
Yeah.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rokovina and members. I have here in my hand a 50-state comparative edition by the Demographic, Tax, and Revenue, Government, Economic, Education, Natural Resources, Transportation, Public Health, and Welfare. And on page 26 of this particular, actually 27, of this publication that's distributed to all of the states, it ranks Minnesota not in the middle, not even close to the top. It ranks it at the just one from the bottom here, 49. And it says the ranking on the Small Business Survival Index for 2003, ranking of relative government burden on small business. The source is a Small Business Survival Committee, Small Business Survival Index 2003, ranking the public environment, the policy environment for entrepreneurs across the nation. So what this is telling us, members, is that Minnesota is just about dead last in terms of small business friendliness. And this is taking over 17 points of competitiveness for the state demographics. So what it's telling us here is if we want to do this, if we want to increase the minimum wage, we get to be 50. We get to be the very last. And we can do that. If we want to do that today, we can pass this and say, you know what? Let's just kill every small business that's trying to make a living here in Minnesota. So I would encourage members, don't make us last here.
Any further discussion?
I do.
Representative Gazelka, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, you can probably answer this or the AFL-CIO gentleman, but are not some union wages tied to minimum wage? When minimum wage goes up, then they go up as well?
Mr. Chair, I think the only union members whose wages are tied to minimum wage are probably, and I don't know if the ladies who talked here this evening and the one gentleman are members of the Hotel Employees and Restaurant Employees Union. If they are, they can nod, but I see one of them, two of them nodded. He didn't, the bartenders, so I would think they're the only union employees whose wages are going to be affected. I don't know if someone from the United Food and Commercial Workers or... I think Mr. Gazelka, Representative Gazelka, is asking this question. Do Mr. Ensang, are any building trades people that making $20 an hour, do they go to 25 if minimum wage goes up 75 cents an hour? I don't think so.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, I just want to be, or Rick Avita, I just want to be clear that no union wages are tied to minimum wage so that it's not just about minimum wage.
Mr. Chair,
want to make sure I understand that.
Representative Duck, I think I know the question you're asking. Does some master agreement tie their wage, whether it's United Food and Commercial, I would think would be the only ones close, or maybe, you know, the Unite workers, do they do that? I don't know the answer.
No.
Okay. I'm getting an engagement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought that was true, but I could be wrong on that. But I'm as well concerned about this. My whole goal is to help small businesses succeed. And especially in rural Minnesota, some of those businesses are just barely making it. They can barely afford to hire somebody. I'm concerned that they may cut back on their employees as well. You know, minimum wage really is, to me, it's an entry-level wage. I mean, if you look at the data, you have, I think it's 59% of the people that have minimum wage they're part-time people. It's not their primary income, not their primary end in life. They're under, I believe it's almost half are under age 24. So it's not like, you know, that this is going to impact a lot of people that way as their primary wage. But it concerns me because Minnesota consistently is out in front in penalizing businesses. And, you know, right now we conform to the federal guidelines for minimum wage.
That's equal to, I believe, 27 states, and then another 9 have no standards at all. So we're, you know, it's not like we're definitely not worse than average. We're better than average in this regard already. And so I want to express my concern, because I think as much as I want to help people, I don't want the government making businesses do that. I respected the gentleman, I think his name was Todd Perkins. I appreciate the fact that he wants minimum wage and that he pays more. I think a good business person, if they have the money, it really does make sense to pay more to get good people. But that's a big step or a big difference to me in encouraging business owners to do right by their employees and the government making them or taking money from them just because they're successful and they want to step out. So I just want to offer my not my support for this bill because of those reasons.
Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that I also want to just comment on Mr. Perkins' comments about good employers paying good wages for good staff. I have a staff of nearly 100 people in my grocery operation that I have, and we don't pay minimum wage. We pay better than minimum wage all the way across, and even when we start students, we pay better than minimum wage. And as Mr. Anderson stated, when we bring these students in, it's just amazing what we will see happen to them in a period of 6 months, how we can transpire a student that has no basic skills to talk to an adult, and how we can take them through the training process and get them to a point where they can work with the public and they can become social and they can pick up lifelong skills. So that comment being made about parents should almost pay us for the first 6 months the students are with us, there's a little truth to that. But I'm also concerned about what we're doing to our resort business and to a lot of our tourist business with raising this minimum wage for college student jobs for summer and high school kids getting jobs for summer. And I think that I really think business itself takes care of the marketplace. And I'm sure there are places out there that are not paying the wages they should. And shame on them, but I really hate to see us defer from the federal wage level that we're at. So just a comment. Thank you.
Representative Vanderbilt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, I do believe that, you know, you are always a strong advocate for this and that you're genuinely sincere, and we've talked about it and you've tried to persuade me.
That was a tough job, Mr. Chair.
But if I sincerely thought that we could legislate that, you know, no one would have to struggle to make ends meet and that would work for the whole economy, I mean, I would do it. I mean, I would vote for a $9 or $10 or whatever, and not in the disingenuous sense that some people offer those amendments. But I have to tell you, I do think that in the long run, it would hurt job prospects and opportunity in our state. And so I know you're sincere, and I wish I could go with you on this, but I just can't.
Representative Yaros.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members, I don't know what it means, but I'm probably the only one that has had a restaurant and business experience on this. Well, not you, you're a business, restaurant business. That was one of my things that I did. I managed my parents' real estate business, and we owned a restaurant. I couldn't believe that people in Minnesota and I can't believe these states that are paying such low wages. We paid our top waitress $5 per hour when we only had to pay, I believe, $1.85 or $2.85. This was in 1982 when I left the place to become a rich lobbyist and then a politician.
Just keep going up, don't
we were paying $5. I asked my employees to join the union to get the health care benefits. They didn't want to because their spouses had the... I wanted to join the union. I joined the union, but I couldn't get it because I was a owner. But they changed, the hotel and restaurant union changed that law or their regulation. We were the cook, the ethnic cook, $7 or $8 per hour. That was 22 23 years ago. I'm really surprised that it's still 515, 20 some years after I left the restaurant business. And I can't believe. Actually, I voted against the tax, cigarette tax increase, because I thought that we would be not competitive with surrounding states. I don't think that's the same problem with the restaurants. Some, but not much. Alcohol and cigarettes, yes, but not restaurants. So, I think that Representative Howell's amendment took care of some of the concerns that we have, and I know that people that start out don't earn $5 per hour. You know, I think they should be trained, they should pay less. So I don't see much problem with this bill. I was paying almost that amount 82 is what, 23 years ago.
Double.
Yeah. And we didn't serve pizza, Mr. Representative. Representative Rukavina.
Fala.
Walton.
Any further discussion?
Form.
You ready?
Chair, I appreciate the fact that you gave me the hearing, and I suspect that we will have much greater debate when this issue gets to the floor.
I suspect so.
And Mr. Chair, I just do want to thank the people that came here tonight, the tipped employees. I just appreciate the fact that they told their stories to us.
Yep. Representative Rukavina renews his motion that Senate File 3, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
We're adjourned.